Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
The U.S. has ordered the families of diplomats to leave the Venezuelan capital, Caracas, amid mass protests against a controversial vote scheduled for this weekend. And yes, I believe it's Sunday. This indicates that the State Department expects the situation to deteriorate further, which is alarming considering that the country's ongoing political crisis has already led to more than 100 deaths, mainly protesters shot by police or armed civilian gangs known as colectivos. Now, listeners in recent weeks will remember we talked about the colectivos on Free Talk Live. These are basically just, you know, we consider the government to be an armed gang here on Free Talk Live, but these are non-governmental armed gangs who are kind of allied loosely with the government because the government is giving them weapons. Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, has been funneling guns into the hands of these colectivos.
Sounds kind of like a unofficially official set of vigilantes.
Yeah, basically. The kind of people who are willing to do the real dirty work of just murdering protesters.
Kind of like some of the cartels in Mexico that were given weapons by the Obama administration through Fast and Furious.
I want you to take a guess. I don't know how much reading you've been doing about this, Daryl, but DollarToday.com, without going to visit. Remember the last time we...
The last time? I recall it being about 3,000.
No, come on. We've had a time in between. I'm sure we've had a time in between 3,000 and
the
last time.
Might have been 3,700.
I remember like 7,400, somewhere in that range the last time I looked at it. This was a few weeks ago.
I've also got a horrible short-term memory.
Right. So this was a few weeks ago.
If you're saying a few weeks ago it was somewhere near 7,000, I'll... 15,246.
10,000 right now. $10,389 Bolivar per U.S. dollar. That's the black market exchange rate. Now, just by comparison's sake, the government's official exchange rate
is 10 to 1.
So the real exchange rate, as decided by the open black marketplace or relatively closed black marketplace, is 10,389 Bolivar Fuerte per U.S. dollar.
I'm curious what the price is on eBay, because it's been a while since I've looked on eBay for any Bolivar Fuerte.
And you paid like what, $10? How much did you get?
Did you calculate
what the rate was that you had gotten at the time? Because I know you had to pay for shipping too, so including the shipping cost.
I don't recall, but eBay allows you to like go back and look at your history.
Yeah.
So I can go back and figure that out.
It was last fall.
No, it was late in the fall.
CNN reporting that while opponents of Venezuela's president blocked more than a dozen intersections in the capital today, no massive demonstrations yet took place on the first day of the government's ban on protests ahead of a controversial weekend election. The regime of leftist President Nicolas Maduro said it has dispatched more than 370,000 troops across the country and has forbidden protests ahead of Sunday's election of a, quote, constituent national assembly, unquote, that would rewrite the Constitution at Nicolas Maduro's request.
370,000 members of the military across the country.
That's what it says here, yeah.
That's a bunch.
That's a lot. I mean, what does the U.S. military have? I think the Army's, what, like 500,000 or something like that?
Well, the Army is only one branch of the U.S. military.
Correct.
There's, you know,
and the U.S. Landmass is much larger. So 370,000 in just the landmass of Venezuela.
Right, but
it's heavy.
Venezuela also doesn't have military bases around the globe.
Yeah, that's true. Troops were sent throughout the country to secure preparations for Sunday's vote. Now, what about that vote? The gentleman who was writing over at Slate.com has a little bit more information about just who exactly gets to vote in this thing. That's still to come here. Let me continue with his piece. So he talks about the protests and points out that Maduro has been feuding since 2015 with the opposition-controlled National Assembly, which is the country's unicameral legislature that has been attempting to remove him from power. Maduro, who took power in 2013 as the handpicked successor of the late Hugo Chavez, has become increasingly unpopular as the country's economy has deteriorated, the result of both economic mismanagement and low oil prices. I did have a little bit about the vote that happened in July, where apparently 98% of the voters at this referendum that was voted, you know, scheduled by the opposition, signaled their disapproval of President Nicolas Maduro's plan to hold a constituent assembly by casting ballots again back in the middle part of this month in a vote unlike any other in this nation's history, according to the New York Times. They had a yes or no, or three yes or no questions drafted with the aim of weakening Maduro's legitimacy in the days before his constituent assembly is expected to convene. Opponents see the assembly as a power grab by an increasingly unpopular leader and fear that he may use it to do away with democratic elections entirely. Sunday's exercise, known as a popular consultation, was organized by a slate of opposition parties that dominate Venezuela's National Assembly. Organizers had hoped that the large turnout and lopsided result would widen rifts within the governing party and deepen the government's international isolation, undermining Maduro's plan to appoint an assembly of handpicked supporters to draft a new constitution. Shortly before midnight, a group of Venezuelan university administrators tasked with overseeing the vote count said that more than 7,186,000 ballots had been cast. Now, is it 30 million people in the country?
Somewhere around there. The opposition will be able to use any number lower than 7.2 million as leverage. It will gain fuel for protest and garner more international support and likely encourage more sanctions from the U.S. government against Maduro's government. And it would have a stronger hand in secret negotiations between Maduro and the opposition that figures like former Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero have been mediating. Maduro's bold move to regain control of his country could end up hurting him more than helping.
I don't see how this guy could get hurt much more than get, you know, actually murdered in the streets at this point by the opposition. I mean, he has no legitimacy left. I don't know why anybody does support him. Is it just because the, you know, the country bumpkins out in the...
Fear.
Okay, but they say that he's got more support out in rural Venezuela. So I'm just wondering, why is that? Is it because they don't know what's happening? Is it because they actually get to grow their own food or something and they're not starving like the people in the cities? I mean, why... Why does he have more support out there? Why is it that the rural Venezuelans are more behind socialism, you know, in its current form?
Any answer I give is going to be pure speculation
because I don't live in rural Venezuela.
I
doubt many of our listeners do.
The Venezuelan Supreme Court did reverse their ruling on striking all of the powers from the National Assembly.
I don't know if they reversed the ruling before or after their building was set on fire, but that happened too.
Right.
So, imagine they felt like perhaps it was a little dangerous what they had attempted to do there. So, if the vote takes place this weekend on Sunday, according to Slate.com, things could get very ugly quickly. The International Crisis Group notes that, quote, fringe elements in the opposition, collectively referred to as La Resistance. Well, it's not spelled like that. But that would be like the French version.
Right. And there was also at one time a WWE tag team called La Resistance.
Frustrated with the MUD's nonviolent approach, talk in private of armed resistance. With millions of illegal weapons in private hands, arming urban guerrillas might not be difficult. While governance in the region's far from perfect, Latin America has mostly left behind the 20th century era of dictatorships, coups, and civil conflict. With the exception of Cuba, every government in the region was democratically elected, and with the resolution of Colombia's five-decade war with the FARC, there are no ongoing armed conflicts. Drug violence and crime is another story. He says, finally, that's not to say there aren't warning signs. Brazil's current president, Michel Temer, took power after the highly controversial impeachment of his predecessor, denounced by opponents as a coup, and both he and his main rival are facing criminal charges for corruption amid growing political chaos. Nicaragua's Daniel Ortega amended the constitution and sidelined his rivals ahead of a controversial election to a third term last year. And all this is to say that this weekend events in Venezuela could very well have stakes beyond Venezuela itself. Indeed, there were reports that large numbers of Venezuelans were attempting to cross the border into Colombia to presumably get away from what might end up transpiring this weekend, with perhaps even more conflict in the streets than we've seen in recent days. I was thanked by one of our listeners recently for, you know, us talking about this on the radio, with Coinbase coming out and making the announcement that they are not going to be supporting the what's called Bitcoin Cash fork of Bitcoin that's expected to happen coming up on August 1st, and Coinbase being one of the biggest brokerage houses, if you will, for people acquiring Bitcoin. A lot of people got that message and they were wondering, well, how do I protect my opportunity to split Bitcoin, if Bitcoin does split? And it sure does sound like it's going to, coming up on August 1st, into this sort of original Bitcoin and then this new Bitcoin Cash version. What do they do, Anthony? What's the simplest solution here?
Well, the first thing is to make sure that you are in control of the keys to your Bitcoin. So that's the first thing. And with exchanges such as Coinbase, you're not in control of the keys, and they're saying they're not supporting it. So they're suggesting everybody that does want to have access to Bitcoin Cash remove their funds from Coinbase into a wallet that does support you owning your own keys. And then that's the first mechanism. Make sure you get into something where you're controlling the keys. Once you're in control of the keys, you're safe. Okay, so whether or not a wallet actually does support BCC is irrelevant, because then in your wallet, you're able to export the keys. The keys can be imported somewhere else if that wallet doesn't support BCC.
And BCC then being the short code, if you will, or the acronym for Bitcoin Cash. That's what they're
Although
calling
apparently
it.
Well, there's
because,
another...
Because the, yeah, go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, apparently there's another crypto. I don't know what the actual name is,
they
but there's another
that.
Thing
yeah.
that has been using BCC.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. BCH actually is what Kraken's calling Bitcoin Cash now.
One of the things that's going to happen when this split happens is there's these, you know, adherents to one side or the other who are like big fans of one side or the other, and they're going to mm-hmm. hold on to their Bitcoin, wait until the split. So if they've got, let's say they've got, you know, 10 Bitcoin, and then the, you know, the fork happens, and then you have 10 Bitcoin and 10 Bitcoin Cash, the people who are like, yeah, Bitcoin Cash, are going to, you know, may sell their Bitcoin to try to get more Bitcoin Cash. Or the people who are like, yeah, original Bitcoin, might try to sell their Bitcoin Cash to get original Bitcoin. So there's going to be a crazy kind of trading day here, the sort of first opportunity yeah. for people to jump in and trade. We're seeing the, according to CoinMarketCap.com, if you actually look on that site, that'll show you the Bitcoin. If you put in BCC, then it gives you the choice. It's BitConnect is the other one, Daryl. That's the original BCC. But this new BCC, Bitcoin Cash, okay. they've got what's called a futures market. Right now, the Bitcoin Cash is trading at $402 per Bitcoin. So basically, like, what, a fifth, essentially, of the value of a Bitcoin right now? Did Apple ever come on board with Dash? Are they still holding...
There's a version that's like 17 versions behind.
They're still holding
has
it back.
Dash.
So
No. We've got Dash.
Okay.
Dash is on iOS. Apple finally approved a release after 3 months.
Really?
In limbo, and since then they've actually released two more. We've been able to get up two more in a couple of days to make things up at par with our current versions of the other apps. And now they actually called us today and said we're not going to hold you guys anymore. So it's been pretty good, and we've had some good results from that, and it's up to date now, and our iOS users are really happy, and we've since also added Civic and added BCAP, so a couple other ones, and things are pretty good on the iOS front.
Good. I'm glad to hear that news. We'll definitely let our listeners know, because one of them was just saying that he wanted Apple to update the wallet, so maybe he needs to go and check. Has it been pushed out yet? It's available through the App Store?
Yes. Okay. Yes. We all love contracts. You know, you agree to terms of something. And let's say it's a sports score. It's a betting thing. I say that, you know, you think the team's going to win. I think the team's going to win. We draft up the contract. It goes on to Ethereum. And then you sit waiting for data to come into the contract that says, hey, this thing happened. This the the Wizards beat the Celtics. And, okay, what does this contract say? It says, if the Celtics win, you pay out this guy. And that's what happened. It executes. It removes the need for these intermediaries that are always standing between us having to do things.
So let me give the example.
Wait, one second. This can be lawyers. This can be insurance companies. It's taking this disintermediation that we're seeing right now in the financial services and governments with money, and it's taking you to other areas and other sectors that can remove certain people that we don't really need to stand between peers and individuals interacting between each other. It's very similar to Bitcoin, and I don't understand why, if you like Bitcoin, this is a smart thing that automates automatically based on what people think and the contracts people have, the same type of system. People don't want to use the contracts and don't use them, but I just have not really seen a good case that you bring up as to why this is any different.
Well, the way it's different is with Bitcoin. I've never had some contract that I've signed on Bitcoin that said you are going to do X at 4 p.m., and if it doesn't happen at 4 p.m., it's going to enforce itself. I'm glad you keep saying if you don't like smart contracts, don't use them, and that's the side that I'm standing on, is I'm not going
to
use them.
No, I'm not saying don't use it. I'm saying you wouldn't go into that contract you're talking about.
I'm not going to use smart contracts anyway, because...
Okay, but the person who was late was in a contract. The person who was late was in a contract. And they're not going to complain afterwards because they signed a contract. It's like, well, I didn't know that was going to happen. You signed a contract. It carried out.
People signed EULAs all the time, and there have been companies that wind up putting stuff in there of, we own your firstborn son, we own your soul. Nobody reads EULA.
It's the same thing with Bitcoin, Daryl. You make a payment, you're not expecting someone to take it back, and you can't give the buts. But I didn't mean to send that, but this. And you want someone to step in, you want some legal person to come in and say to you, oh, well, it wasn't what it meant to happen. That's what Bitcoin does, is removes the need from those people. And if the contract,
I'm not
smart,
signing contract. When I go to the local shop where I buy my honey, I don't sign a contract. I send a certain amount of Bitcoin. And I verify, yep, I am intending to send $11 for this transaction. There's no contract involved.
But you, in order to get a refund,
the point is that in order to get a refund, you wouldn't have someone else come in and say, we're going to give you your money back, or we'll have someone step in. You'd have to deal with the person, and you have to talk to them, and you can do that.
It would seem to me that a contract that is written into a blockchain is immutable, and so therefore you don't have to worry about somebody
seems
going
to be
in there,
unless the coders decide to go back and reverse it.
But
that's where I agree with you, Daryl. I agree with you there. I thought that was a horrible move. They chose consensus over immutability. They basically said, well, all these people want to change this back, so we're going to do that. Instead of standing by, the code is law, it's immutable, it can't be changed. And I was really a bit disappointed in that decision. I left Ethereum in 2015, and I was against the DAO changeover. I would have lost about $100,000 because I accepted it as, you know, this is what happened. And it wasn't a theft, Ian. It was more of the person exploited a flaw in the code, but the code exactly executed as it should have, and he saw the way it was. And so I wouldn't say it was stolen.
An exploit, perhaps?
It was an exploit.
He found a loophole.
Right.
He found a loophole. It happened. The investors should have lost their money.
My question is, what's going to happen with the user-activated soft fork? Everybody's pretty much saying in the articles I've been reading that that's kind of a done deal. Like, it's not going to happen on August 1st because they're getting their segregated witness. But is it possible that they're going to try to soft fork anyway, because later on the SegWit thing has the 2x part and they don't support that?
It's possible that they might try, but whether or not they're successful is a completely different question.
Yeah, and it seemed like at least as of a few weeks ago, but the thing is, these things change so quickly within the cryptocurrency world. I don't know what
and,
the current...
By they, I could mean as few as... two people that are like, you know, hardcore user activated software. We're all in.
Right.
No, it's like the Bernie people of Donald Trump just got sworn into office. Here's how Bernie can still become president.
Yeah, it could very much be like that. They may find it more, they may be more likely to bide their time. So to accept that they're getting what they wanted, the segregated witness, but then
try to stop the hard fork later on to the 2 megabyte part of the SegWit 2X. So there may be another showdown later on in November. Things could get very dramatic again at that time. I was just talking with the guys from Jax today about how to do that, and it's there are a couple of options. So I was worried that they only had the 12-word backup phrase. They do allow you to export your keys, like the actual
Airbits
key
does as well.
Yeah. So I saw that with Airbits. The actual key of like this jumbled bunch of numbers and letters that is essentially the key to your private access to your Bitcoin. Once the split happens, then you'll be able to take those keys, export them, and import them into some piece of software that will support this new Bitcoin Cash. That's going to be the tricky part,
right?
Because the average person is not going to likely want to, you know, put a 140 gigabyte program on their computer, because that's going to take up a lot of space. Most people aren't willing to do that. And so the question is, which of the programs that are available for the Bitcoin Cash will be easiest to use for people? That I don't have the answer for. It seems to me that the easiest road is to put your Bitcoin on the Kraken exchange and let them do it for you, because they say they're going to be doing that. They're going to support it. Daryl, you wanted to share some kind of an update between what's been going on with the U.S. government and the Russian government. Apparently, there were sanctions at some point placed on the Russian government by
the U.S.
Within
the last couple of days, passed the U.S. House on Wednesday, I believe, vote of 419-3.
What over? What was the excuse for we're going to put sanctions on the Russian government?
Russia meddled in the U.S. election and Donald Trump isn't letting us investigate. So the initial bill began as, and there have been sanctions against Russia for decades, but the bill initially started as something to limit the president's ability to rescind or weaken the sanctions. And then it turned into new sanctions, not just against Russia, but also against North Korea and Iran, because, well, we've got to pander to everybody in Congress to be able to get enough votes.
I see.
And then if we have enough votes, then Trump will sign it, because otherwise he vetoes and it comes back and then we just have another vote to override the veto.
So what do the sanctions mean? I mean, does it mean that they're going to make sure that no one in America can do business with the Russians, or like you can't sell food to them, or what is it? What does it mean? Do we know?
I believe that's part. I've not read what the sanctions actually are that are being implemented, but the European Union isn't happy about it because it limits some of the EU members from doing business with Russia. So it's a huge cluster.
Sanctions can limit the EU?
The cap of 455 embassy staff appears to be a significant reduction, according to antiwar.com, though exactly how many that amounts to isn't totally clear. Russia isn't singling out specific people who have to leave, but has complained recently that there are too many U.S. spies in Moscow with embassy credentials. Some are speculating this could expel in excess of 100 embassy staffers. Retaliation to both the U.S. expulsion of Russian embassy staffers back in December and a growing array of U.S. sanctions against Russia. The U.S.
Boy, how
embassy,
sad when it's Donald Trump, who seems like the reasonable person in this, if indeed he had intended to undo the, I mean, maybe he didn't, but if
right,
he had
we don't know if he intended to do anything, but Congress was just saying, we're not going to let you do something that we think you might want to do.
Right.
The president suggested that officers should hit suspects' heads on the doors of their police cars. Quote, when you see these towns and when you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in rough. And I said, please don't be too nice. Like when you guys put somebody in the car and you're protecting their head, you know, the way you put their hand over, like don't hit their head, and they've just killed somebody, don't hit their head. I said, you can take your hand away, okay? His remarks received significant applause. Trump made the dubious claim that laws are horrendously stacked against police and said he wants to change them.
Oh.
He said, for years and years, the
laws... Against the police. Before you go on with this this quote, Maybe he hasn't been paying attention to all the Supreme Court decisions in the recent times that have determined that not only do you have to, clue the police in that you intend to stay silent, so you have to break your silence in order to intend to stay silent and inform them of
in,
that.
In theory, you could handwrite a note.
Presuming the cop can read. The way the U.S. justice system is supposed to work is that it's the accused who have protections.
Correct.
It is the accused, the person who's been accused of doing a criminal act.
Ian, they wouldn't arrest an innocent person. 97% of people wind up being convicted. So statistically, they are not arresting innocent people.
Well, statistically, what they're doing is they're offering plea deals and scaring the crap out of people into taking the plea deals rather than actually, you know.
Right, so they're admitting to being criminals.
That's true, they are.
They're admitting it. So we just need to get that conviction rate up to 100%, and then we know.
There is no more accused. Everyone's a criminal.
That everybody's a criminal because everybody is being convicted.
Yeah. Well, that's the insanity. I mean, what you're saying is the position, essentially, that the state and the police are taking. And
it's like 1984, Brave New World, and the trial all merged into one and became the United States government.
It's sick, but for those that may be unfamiliar, the idea is you protect the rights of the accused. And, of course, if you're accused of something in this country, you might as well be guilty, because a lot of people will just believe that you're guilty simply by the fact that you have been accused of something.
One of my relatives was a longtime police officer, and I had very much experience with him. Mm. And he would always say right off the bat, everybody is born guilty, and they treat them as guilty. And they'll never, they don't listen to the judges, they don't listen to the laws, they listen to their commanding officer. They do exactly what they're told to do by that person. And just like when they seize all the assets from people, they don't, either way, he would say it's a win-win, because if they decide to try to get their property back, and if if the police lose the case, the taxpayers pay for it. If they don't win the case or try to get their property back, they get to reap the benefits of selling that property.
That's correct. Yeah, the cops, individual cops, very rarely personally lose for any mistakes they make or any crimes that they commit.
They don't care. I was forced to ride in a squad car with this person since I was 7. I even got to sit in on their classes. And when I finally moved out, he would call me and tell me all about the things they did. I seen them do so much stuff. They get away with so much, you just don't believe, because of that badge.
Do the cops in your area get, privileges at fast food joints? Because, some places will try to give free food to cops. Does that happen to you? Oh, he's getting his order.
Actually not. Here you go.
You're paying? Much? You're paying. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I'm sorry, hold on. I'm sorry. You want me to put him on?
No, I'm just gonna
we don't really.
Okay.
Because it's sort of one of those situations to where, you don't want to get stuck in a quid pro quo situation.
I'm glad to hear that, Patrick, because I know that in some departments they do take the freebies. I know where I'm from in Florida, I had understood that if they went to Taco Bell, Taco Bell would serve them for free. Here in Keene, I was also pleased to find, Keene, New Hampshire is where we do this show from, I was pleased to learn years ago that Keene police have a policy of always refusing freebies. If you are on Keene police and you're caught accepting some sort of freebie, you would get in some kind of hot water for that because of what you're talking about, Patrick.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.